back together again. You and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, October 8th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. We highlighted a Hearst, Connecticut media story regarding allegations of questionable marriages in Bridgeport. Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson dropped by to address those same scam marriage allegations as well as talk about more calls for better oversight for state nonprofit funding. Hearst, Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar joined us for his weekly update, while CBS News reporter Zach Udak had the latest from Washington on legal challenges to sending more National Guard troops to U.S. cities. So just when you think, just when you wake up on a given day and say, hey, maybe Bridgeport is tapped out, maybe there isn't going to be any more looniness, any more craziness, any more alleged funny business into and through Bridgeport, something happens. And you are dragged back into reality here. Something happens, and in the end, when you get the explanation of what has just happened, you say, well, yeah, sadly, it's Bridgeport, and you can see about 150,000 of the fine people that live in the city throwing their arms up and saying, what am I talking about today? Oh, and the story today has some familiar names. You'll be shocked when I give you the names. The proverbial feather will knock you over. Well, can knock me over with a feather. Remember about a year and a half ago, there were allegations that a very familiar name in Bridgeport politics, Wanda Jeter Pataki. I wasn't making this up. This was a story, if you remember, I had my buddy, my pal, Paul Bass on, from the New Haven Independent, who wrote a very long, very detailed story on how Wanda Jeter Pataki may have had a hand in what was being described as a marriage mill at New Haven Town Hall. And some marriages had been seen earlier by a New Haven clerk. I forget her name, but she was eventually, I think, kind of run out of her job. Because how dare she do her job and call the state and call the feds and said, hey, we have some scam marriages going here. But, of course, the leftists that now run the city of my birth, the great city of Elms in New Haven, harassed her enough where I think she's out of a job right now. But I think there may have been some sort of a settlement there. But anyway, well, you know, you would, and that was about a year and a half ago, and I swear to you, I swear. A few days ago, I was thinking about that story because I had been reading the New Haven Independent. I had been, you know, researching some stuff. And I said, geez, I wonder what happened to that marriage mill. Well, guess what? Sham marriages are apparently, and again, innocent till proven guilty. I get it. But just as when the New Haven story broke, there were other allegations of, I think, things happening in Southington and Bridgeport and the town of Trumbull as well. Well, guess what? Apparently, according to a very well-written and seems to be a well-researched story here in the Connecticut Post, apparently, true love, my friends, love is in the air. It looks like we have sham marriages in Bridgeport. I'm shocked. Aren't you? You mean people, Paul, would be coming here to soak up immigrant benefits? I'm kidding. Yes. And I urge you, if you have access to any of the Hearst publications, the New Haven Register, the Connecticut Post, the Norwalk Hour, the Stamford Advocate, make sure you read this story. A story by Joshua Eaton, Brianna Gersiulo, and our buddy Brian Lockhart, who's been on the show here several times. The headline says it all, kids. Why couples traveling to Connecticut to wed are raising questions about sham marriages. Oh, how dare questions be raised? I'm sure, especially in these quickie marriages where one person might not be a U.S. citizen. Oh, stop it, Paul. This is about love. Oh, come on. L is for the way you look. at me. Sorry. Oh, is for the only one I see. Come on, V. Is a very, very... I'm sorry, I just left. When I think marriage, I think love. I think dedication. What's your name again? I think love. I think dedication to people till death do us part, or till we can be hitched in an and look, I'm just telling you what's in this story, okay? But let's get into the details, shall we? Why couples traveling to Connecticut to wed are raising questions about sham marriages. You're kidding. Sham marriages in Bridgeport? I'm shocked. Oh, my God. E is every word that... Oh, sorry. I'm just, you know, when I even... Of course this is love. Stop. Bridgeport has about 130 justices of the peace. This is not me saying this. This is from the Hearst story. I swear you have to read this. Your head's going to explode. Have somebody there with a wet mop. Have a loved one there with a wet mop, because your head is going to shatter when you hear this story. And the best part of this whole thing is nobody will do anything about it. Don't look at us. Oh, how do we know these marriages aren't based in love? Is all that I can give to you in Bridgeport. Bridgeport has about 130 justices of the peace. That's according to the city's website. Officials who are authorized under Connecticut state law to officiate marriages at their discretion. Of four women who officiated the majority of weddings in Connecticut's biggest city in May, records show. Now, do these names ring a bell here? Let's play a little game show. When you recognize a name, just go ding, 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 ding. Ready? Give me a shot here. Try it. Ding, 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 ding. There you go. Records show that from May, four women officiated the majority of weddings. Quickie weddings. Right? Wanda Jeter Pataki, a former city employee and vice chair of the Democratic Town Committee. I'm shocked. City Councilwoman Enida Martinez. Are you shocked? And two of Enida Martinez's daughters, Jasmine Cooper and Jamisha Cooper. Again, folks, don't shoot me. I'm just the messenger here. On many weekdays, either Wanda Jeter Pataki or Martinez was found camped in community rooms toward the back of the government center, first floor waiting room for couples to come back for quick marriage ceremonies. In May, over 60% of all the weddings in Bridgeport were officiated by one of the four, records show. Well over half of those were between, here it is, folks, here it is. Wake up, Bridgeport, wake up, Connecticut. Now this comes as we, what did we talk about all yesterday? Not enough money because we're giving out benefits to illegals. Well over half of those weddings were between a citizen and a non-citizen who appeared to come from out of state. The volume of marriages, especially those between a citizen and a non-citizen, because, of course, everybody gets up in the morning and says, I'm a citizen, I'm just going to marry this non-citizen. Because it's love is all that I can give to you. The volume of marriages could increase the likelihood that some of these marriages were shams intended solely to obtain an immigration benefit. Oh, no. Tell me that doesn't happen. And we've only been talking about this for a couple of years after it popped up, its head reared its head in New Haven. Oh, no. They love this country. How could they be just coming for the benefits? Now, when we come back, I'll tell you why New Haven, Bridgeport, Trumbull, other cities and towns in Connecticut are becoming magnets for this. And I'll ask the question, do you think that our esteemed men and women in the General Assembly will change the law to battle this? No, they won't. You know why they won't? Because Trump. Tell you, people ask me, they say, how do you do 4 hours of just talking on the air? I said, well, you have to understand something. We do a lot of other stuff. Chris's news, our national news, commercials, traffic, weather. So, you know, I'm not actually talking for 4 hours. And somebody says, well, how long do you talk? I said, about 2 hours and 35 minutes, 2 hours and 40 minutes. Well, that's still a long time. And I say, well, yeah, it is, but it really isn't when you do it in and around the city of Bridgeport. Now, again, I'm not in any way pillaring the fine people of Bridgeport, the people that are in Bridgeport, some of whom want good governance. But man, this is the gift that just never stops giving. I guess now in Bridgeport, as we found out in New Haven about a year, year and a half ago, and as I guess is going on in Trumbull, you folks in Trumbull, have you heard about this? There's another allusion in this story that there's a sham marriage operation going on in Trumbull. Why couples traveling to Connecticut to wed are raising questions about sham marriages. Now, there's an easy way to slow this down. But I will ask this question now. You folks in the Democratic majority in Hartford, Bob Duff, Martin Looney, Jason Rojas, Matt Ritter, Ned Lamont. You going to do anything about this? Or what could we do? Well, you know what you can do? Get rid of something that Connecticut does that is acting as a magnet here. Apparently, unlike in other states, including neighboring New York, couples in Connecticut can get a license to get married and get married on the same day. Who thought that was a good idea? That's the first thing that has to go. Get rid of the ability in this state to get a marriage license and then get married the same day. No, that's not necessary. Well, you know, we love each other so deeply. Well, then you can wait a few days. Says here in this story, a spokesperson for the city of Bridgeport. Now get this. Now, folks, if this is not Connecticut, I don't know what is, right? By the way, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, especially in a story like this, I know there are some people that may not want to go on the radio because your voices will be recognized. So if you have any information about this, about these alleged the marriage mill going on, allegedly, let's be kind now on one aspect of it. Innocent till proven guilty, but some of the names, look, don't get mad at me if you're one of these people named in this story or you hear somebody screaming at me on the radio. Don't kill the messenger here, Toots. I'm not naming the names here. Hearst is. But see, we can talk about it here. You can't talk about it anywhere else. So if you have any information about marriage scams or stuff you see at City Hall, text me. I won't mention your name. I won't mention your town. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. A Bridgeport spokesperson says it's not the city's responsibility to police marriages. The Connecticut Department of Public Health, which maintains state marriage records, says it's not their responsibility either. So both the state and the city of Bridgeport, according to this story that I'm reading from here, say no, it's a law enforcement issue, but the Connecticut State Police are not investigating the issue. The state's attorney's office for Bridgeport says it's not gotten any related criminal referrals. And state law, now you know where this comes from, protect the illegals. State law places strict limits on when and how local and state law enforcement agencies can cooperate with the feds. Some cities have their own prohibitions. Remember this, A woman in New Haven had to retire last year after an outside investigation commissioned by the city found that she may have violated state and city policies because she reported her concerns about scam marriages to the feds. So that's where we are here in Connecticut, folks. Don't look at me. It's not my responsibility. And if anybody dares to point out some phony marriages here or a marriage scam, who'll get in trouble? The person that raised the red flag. Because that's what we do here in Connecticut. Maddening. Maddening. And I'm shocked at the names, aren't you? Shocking. Wanda Jeter Pataki. Anita Martinez. And two of her daughters. Don't get mad at me. Saying, hey, what are you dragging their names through the mud? I ain't dragging nobody's name through nothing. It's in the paper. Now, here's a question I have. Now, of course, I just got a text here. All right, let's just say, I don't want to get this person perhaps in trouble. Let's just say the first couple of texts that I got from somebody seemed to corroborate the story here. But let me ask you this. Why can't we change the law? Should Connecticut still allow same-day marriage licenses and marriages by justices of the peace? Is that really necessary? All right, if somebody's on their deathbed, all right. Geez, does your fiance speak English here? Do you speak English? English, do you speak it? All right, let's get a perspective on the big stories of the day, including a call by the Republicans in Hartford for better oversight on millions and millions and millions of dollars that goes to state nonprofits. The vast majority of them do wonderful work. But again, now we have a bubbling controversy in Hartford as to whether a well-known state legislator did improper things, routing money there on the state nonprofit side, welcoming Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson to the program. Rob represents Senate District 16, Prospect, Cheshire, Southington, Wolcott, and Waterbury. Rob, it's Paul again. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Paul. Thanks so much for having me.
Rob, what are your thoughts before we get to the news conference you folks had regarding the nonprofit funding and maybe a lack of oversight? This is two stories in a row, Rob, this one here from Hearst and an expose about a year, year and a half ago from my friend Paul Bass at the New Haven Independent regarding possibility of marriage mills and sham marriages. What are your thoughts on this, Rob? And can the state do anything from your point of view in Hartford to cut down on this?
Yes. So, Paul, I was listening to your callers immediately before coming on, and the one gentleman that said that, you know, live and let live because it's a small number, I want to correct him and say it's not a small number. I mean, this is happening in large numbers. The story that you just referenced, the Hearst story from today, says that in 1 month recently in Bridgeport, where they had 100 marriages, something like 40 of them were between someone who was undocumented or not lawful immigrant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to say that every one of those is actually a sham marriage, I don't know that you can go that far. But I can tell you from my own personal experience that it's happening even in my district. I had big issues in Southington.
Really?
Even in small town Wolcott, I had a conversation recently with some folks over at town hall, and mm-hmm. they were telling me, you know, of course, the anecdotal stories, but sure. You know, about how these folks come, they clearly don't even know each other. They're being introduced to one another at the moment they're about to be married. Then you have four people lined up in a row to get married, and they're using the same rings. They're just handing the rings to the next.
Oh, come on. You know, come on. They're handing off the rings.
Yeah. Again, no shame. And, of course, you know, the folks in my town hall here were kind of taken aback by it. And, but they feel like their hands are tied also, that they don't want to get in trouble for discrimination or something like that. So this kind of thing is going to continue to grow and expand as long as Connecticut, like a lot of other things that Connecticut is known for that are not necessarily above board, it's going to become a destination. You want to get your abortion? Come to Connecticut. You want to you know, look for sanctuary services as an illegal immigrant? Come to Connecticut. And if you want a sham marriage, this apparently is the place to get one.
And, Rob, the thing that bothers me, and I'm sure the people you talk to in your district there, they probably told you this, but I would imagine, Rob, and you correct me if I'm wrong, they're probably afraid to actually go on the record and do this, because look at what happened to that woman in town hall in New Haven, who essentially she knew there was maybe not criminality, but an abuse of the system happening, Rob, and I guess she retired early. She was a longtime employee, but she was essentially, you know, beaten into legal submission on this by the city of New Haven.
Right, right. It's unbelievable, but that's what happens when you have a city government that obviously doesn't care much about immigration law in the state of Connecticut. So, you know, I mean, I think that there are things that can be done. I think, number one, you can create penalties for people that engage in this activity for fraudulent purposes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you can do, I think, is to empower, you know, local town governments to be able to set their own parameters, you know, to verify that what's going on is above board.
Yeah.
You know, the story that I was just referencing, I think they documented that this one individual had been married five times.
I saw that,
inside 1 year. You know, something's going on.
Right. You don't have to be a Harvard Law School grad to wonder that. Now, you folks in the caucus, I know, Rob, there has always been this kind of underlying worry that so much of this money, and many of these nonprofits do great work, I think you and I can agree with that, but I guess there's a concern here, and this weaves into a controversy now that's going on in Hartford with some nonprofit funding. Do you think that there are not... there isn't enough oversight here that people don't necessarily know about?
It's a completely and utterly shady process, to be honest with you, Paul. I mean, you know, there is a difference between, you know, nonprofit organizations that the state of Connecticut contracts with to perform various services.
Sure.
And that is all very much above board, and that is takes place through many, many different hearings and discussion and contracts and things like that. Same thing with bonding money. You know, if I need to get some money for, you know, a portion of the state of Connecticut for a project or something like that, I've got to go before the finance committee and make my case. And people can argue whether it's good or bad and so forth. There is a process. What we were referring to yesterday at our press conference is about earmarks, which is nothing more than them just putting a name and a dollar amount in a bill.
Yeah.
And this happened a couple times last in the most recent session, partly in the budget with over 100 items. And then earlier in the year, there was basically a political emergency certified bill that the Democrats brought forward, really just to shake their fist at President Trump. They were angry that Trump, became president, and they wanted to show off for some of their, you know, more progressive constituencies, namely folks very much in favor of illegal immigration, and also folks that want to support the trans community. So they put all of these line item earmarks into a bill to just grant this kind of money in sometimes small amounts, 30, 40, 50, 60,000, all the way up to hundreds of thousands of dollars to these various organizations. But the thing to know is that there's no hearing, there's no application process, there's no nothing. In fact, even at that time, Paul, I was looking these organizations up online, trying to find them on the Secretary of State's office, things like that, and many of them could not be found.
Mm. And Rob, you know, you're right in one case. You know, in a $57 billion budget, okay, 50, 60 grand, whatever. Well, you know, Rob, if it's improper, that's not good, because, I don't know, 60 grand could be a caseworker the DCF needs, or 50 grand could be an entry-level state employee job. So, you know, a lot of people might hear and say, oh, come on, they're complaining. Yeah, but when we have other lingering problems in the state, you know, what people might say, oh, come on, what's Samson going nuts for? No, it's the small amounts, Rob, that I think should be brought to the forefront here.
Right. I mean, and all told, you're talking about $20 million or so between the earmarks that were contained in the state budget and the ones passed earlier in the year, February, March time. Look, you know, it's so funny, Paul, because when that first, you know, ultra hyperbolic political bill that I was referencing passed the legislature, the governor actually vetoed the bill. And in his veto message, he was very clear to say that he didn't approve of the way the earmarks were done.
Yeah.
This is going outside of the proper process. It doesn't allow for the proper amount of scrutiny, et cetera. He said all of that in his veto message. A couple weeks later, they came back in and passed a virtually identical bill, which the governor signed into law.
He got the message.
And, so, I mean, I thank him for his principled stance, but then what happened, governor? I mean, come on now.
In
fact, I actually wrote him earlier this month, knowing we were going to have this press conference, to give him a chance, you know, to explain to me why he had a change of heart, but I haven't got a response to that, of course.
All right, of course not. Hey, Rob Sampson, State Senate Republican, District 16. Rob, good to chat with you. And we'll chat down the road. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
Always my pleasure.
All right, there you go. Rob Sampson, Republican, State Senate member. And if you live in Cheshire, Prospect, Southington, Wolcott, or Waterbury, there's a chance that Rob is your representative in the State Senate. All right, middle of the week, about this time, every Wednesday, 5:15 or so, a couple of minutes either way. Dan Haar, senior editor and columnist, Hearst Connecticut Media. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Good afternoon. Everybody's good today. We're following the news.
Yeah, yeah. How about, I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at this, but you just, no, I'm not laughing at your column. I'm just laughing at why you wrote the column. We have the little dust up from yesterday featuring the U.S. Attorney General and one Senator Richard Blumenthal. What are your thoughts on that, Dan?
My thoughts are that Richard Blumenthal made a significant error in judgment in allowing himself to say 17 years ago, two or three times, that he was in Vietnam, served in Vietnam, rather than that he served during Vietnam, which he did serve in the military, and in the Marine Reserves, to be specific. And while that's not a good thing and hurts his moral authority, the idea that Donald Trump, the most corrupt person ever to hold elected office, probably in the United States, most certainly in the White House, was to say that he shouldn't be a senator because of this. I have no comparative analogy. I have no. What can one say? Both of these elected officials, who, by the way, won't go away, neither of them will go away and retire. Both of these people were duly elected by citizens who know very well the facts and nonetheless decided to elect them. So there should be no question about their ability to serve, neither Trump's nor Blumenthal's. And so it's just amazing to me that everyone in the world doesn't see what Trump is doing with this through his henchmen. And Bondi.
Let us then move a bit closer to home here. You had a column that actually made me laugh, Dan, as sometimes you do, wondering what the state of Connecticut would be trying to buy next after a share in a basketball team and hospitals. Now, you suggested beer or wine or something like that. I don't know, Dan.
I said a beer brand or an airline. You get extra points. You get extra points if you know what that is. What former, now long deceased rock star is that a reference to?
Former long deceased rock star, beer in an airline. No, who?
Frank Zappa.
Oh, my gosh.
To be a country, you have to have a beer, an airline, and a football team.
See,
So that was my obsession. Your reference to Frank Zappa.
I hope you don't think any less of me. I was never a Zappa guy. Now, having said that, fantastic player, wonderfully successful guy, but I was never a Zappa guy. Dan, I don't know.
Great composer, too.
He's
an under-recognized composer of music as well.
Yes.
Highly prolific. In any case, getting back to politics, what was the question? Oh, yes. It was my way of sort of making fun.
Stop buying stuff is what you said.
No. The reality was that in a sense, the column sort of set up a straw man. Because, yes, there is criticism of the deals, and specifically in the case of the Connecticut Sun, the likely way that the governor might try to finance the deal.
Yeah.
But there really is no trend. And I did become convinced. And so I essentially created a point and then shot down the point that I created, which was that the governor is overzealously buying the types of assets that normally remain in private hands, albeit in the case of hospitals, nonprofit hands. So I am convinced, as DECD Commissioner Dan O'Keefe said, and as the governor said to me, that no, there's no trend here. Mm-hmm. There isn't some new policy. It's just two assets came on the market, and the state has an interest in buying a stake in the one and all of the other. That is Waterbury Hospital. Because as it turns out, Hartford HealthCare nor Yale is looking like they want to buy Waterbury Hospital.
Wow.
It loses a lot of money. Yeah. UConn Health thinks they can turn it around, and the alternative is that it falls back into private equity hands, and I think we have enough experience to know that that's not a good thing.
Yeah, Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media, the guest. Couple more things here, Dan. Dan, I don't know about you, but I said this earlier, in following trials, I like, and I know there are different kind of trials, celebrity trials, murder trials, all this stuff. To me, there's nothing good, Dan, nothing better, Dan Har, than a good bribery, extortion, who's giving money to who, a trial. Some of the testimony in this Costa Diamantis trial, Dan, is quite entertaining and revealing, I think.
Yeah, and it's going to get more entertaining when the defense comes on, or it might. I should say it will. I shouldn't say it will. It might get more entertaining because in addition to, as you said, the people so far, we've seen the former vice president of a masonry company, and we've seen the founder of a, I guess you'd call it a construction management company, CAP. Yeah. That's Antoinette Roy.
Yeah.
And then today's news from, I guess this morning, is that Norm Pattis, the defense attorney for Diamantis, got on the stand and tried to establish that nobody forced her to do anything when it came to hiring and her daughter and that sort of thing. She just felt like she wanted to be, you know, good to this fellow Diamantis. So, you know, we'll see what comes out when the defense takes the stand. We all have a feeling that there is going to be an attempt to smear the administration. And the governor did address that last week. Right. In other words, that's the fear. That should be the fear of the administration.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what Republicans have been trying to tar the governor with this. And the governor has correctly said, I'm not saying there's nothing in the administration. I'm saying the governor has correctly said, look, I didn't hire him. I inherited him. And as soon as we found out there was a problem, I fired him.
Yeah.
That was back in October when the subpoenas first came in October of 2021. He fired him. And that is all correct.
So yeah.
The governor, he stands ready to, you know, as you know, and we reported last week, the governor is on the list for possible subpoenas. And when we asked him what he's going to do about that subpoena, he said, talk to my lawyer, William Tong. And Tong ain't talking. So what I'm getting at is that it could get even more interesting when the defense takes the stand.
Why not? And finally, Dan Har, your district where you live there in beautiful, sunny West Hartford, first congressional district, we have the Battle of Cash. Luke Bronin, one of the challengers, the longtime incumbent, John Larson, and over the past couple of days, Dan, it's been, hey, look how much people love me. Look at my money. No, look at my money.
Well, yeah, Bronin has surprised some people, but not others, with $1.2 million in the first quarter. The surprise is that's A, a lot of money, and B, without corporate support, corporate PACs, an especially large amount of money. Other people sort of knew it was coming because he did a phenomenal job of fundraising in both of his mayoral campaigns in 2015 and 2019. He comes from a place where he knows where the money is. Okay. What it does is it effectively makes it a two-man race. And soon enough, the other people that have expressed interest in running are not going to be running, or they'll be running as obviously minor figures. You can't compete if you're raising $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. You're not competing with people that are going to raise $2 and $3 million. So it's going to be a two man race, and what I'm hearing from people is that they're both well liked in the district by traditional Democrats, mm-hmm. and it's too bad it had to come to this.
Interesting. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, thank you. We'll chat with you next week. Have a great rest of the week. Appreciate it.
We will be in touch.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. All right. I stuck my head out the window. There are no National Guard troops that I can see in Bridgeport. I know what you're saying. No Guard troops in Milford or Fairfield or Shelton or Ansonia, but the controversy continues nationwide. Maybe the Guard in Chicago, maybe in Portland. We have court cases regarding that. CBS News reporter Zach Udack joins us remotely to get us updated on some of the latest, what's going on with the court challenges, Chicago, maybe Portland, some other areas. Hey, Zach, it's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you? What's the latest on this, Zach?
Hey, Paul, it's good to be here with you.
Thank you.
We are waiting to hear next, I would say, is tomorrow we should get an answer in California. We've had a judge actually, not in California, in Portland. We've had a judge actually block the deployment of the National Guard there and block the California Guard from being sent up there. And the appeal from the Trump administration, we should get a response from the appeals court judge tomorrow to tell us whether or not that block will be lifted. The other thing that we're on high alert for is if President Trump becomes frustrated enough with these court challenges and delays to his plan here, that he actually tries to invoke the Insurrection Act, which is something that he's discussed really since his first term, since the George Floyd protest.
Yeah.
And what that would do is it would vastly expand the president's authority to deploy the military to in theory, take back control of these cities. So he'd be arguing that, these cities have essentially undergone an insurrection. But we're on high alert for that, and that's something that will immediately face legal challenges should he do that.
Sure. And, Zach, finally, and you folks at the White House and in D.C. are hearing this from both sides. You know, the White House, right, on the president's side says, wait a minute, these courts, right, Zach, you have no authority to slow us down. We can do this. And the other courts and those filing these challenges, like Illinois and Chicago, they say, oh yes, we can. We have the ability to do this.
That's exactly right, Paul. And I think, in large part, it is as the founders intended it. It's that, the judiciary is a check on the executive branch of government and vice versa. So I think that it is working the way that these systems were designed to work. But the president obviously has very lofty goals and does not have a lot of patience to move slowly on them. So, he and his advisors are working rapidly trying to find ways around that. But I think the reality is his only recourse, unless he begins winning in court, is to, choose the kind of nuclear option here, to invoke the Insurrection Act, even though that, as I mentioned before, will set off a whole other litany of court challenges.
Yeah. Zach Udack, CBSU. Zach, thank you. CBS News, thanks, Zach. Appreciate it. Take care. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, sir. So there you go.